Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tough talk, tough times at Al-Qaeda back in the news this week. Senator Barack Obama broke hard and publicly with the views of his longtime pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. He called them divisive and destructive.
They do not portray accurately the perspective of the black church. They certainly don't portray accurately my values and beliefs.
President Bush goes dark on the economy as Wall Street perks up. Whatever you call it, he said, these are very difficult times.
You know, the average person doesn't really care what we call it. The average person wants to know whether or not we know that they're paying higher gasoline prices and that they're worried about staying in their homes. And I do understand that.
And the U.S. State Department acknowledges that Al-Qaeda, AQ, has regained strength in the Middle East.
AQ leaders continued to plot attacks and cultivate stronger operational connections that radiate outward from Pakistan to affiliates throughout the Middle East, North Africa, and Europe.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. Joining me today in the studio is Ellen Goodman, Pulitzer Prize-winning syndicated columnist for the Boston Globe. Ellen, it's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
With us from Indianapolis, Indiana, is Dennis Ryerson, editor, top dog at the Indianapolis Star. Dennis Ryerson, thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be here.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom, Ellen, and Dennis.
Let's go straight to Barack Obama and Reverend Wright. We'll hit it. We'll get it out of the way, but it feeds right into politics. Here's Barack Obama in Hickory, North Carolina, looking to distance himself from Reverend Wright the day after Wright made a number of inflammatory remarks at the National Press Club in Washington.
When he states and then amplifies such ridiculous propositions as the U.S. government somehow being involved in AIDS, when he suggests that Minister Farrakhan somehow represents one of the greatest voices of the 20th and 21st century, when he equates the United States wartime efforts with terrorism, then there are no excuses. They offend me. They rightly offend all Americans, and they should be denounced. And that's what I'm doing very clearly and unequivocally here today.
Denounced, says Obama, clearly and unequivocally. And before he even got there, Reverend Wright was there in Washington almost preemptively. Here he is talking about Obama, criticizing him before the National Press Club on not having listened to the full message of his sermons.
He had to distance himself because he's a politician from what the media was saying I had said, which was anti-American. He said I didn't offer any words of hope. How would he know? He never heard the rest of the sermon.
All right, let's go straight at it. Ellen Goodman, does Barack Obama make a clean break this week and get it behind him or something else?
Who knows? I mean, it's really the narrative, the drama of this campaign has so overshadowed anything approaching public policy. That sounds like a wonkish thing to care about even. But the narrative of this story and this week's narrative, this week's drama was about Barack Obama and his pastor. It was about Jeremiah Wright and his ego. Mm. And it was about Barack Obama and how he would deal with this person who offended everybody, including himself.
Dennis Ryerson, you're in Indiana. You're up next, big time on Tuesday. You've got plenty of black voters in Indiana, but also plenty of the white voters that Obama did not get in Pennsylvania. How's this issue playing in your state as we run straight into the primary there?
Our polling shows that it's not a major issue, but I think there are two things at play here. I think Alan's right. A lot of people are frustrated. This doesn't have much to do with public policy, but to the contrary, a lot of people think this reflects on the decision-making abilities of Barack Obama, how quickly he is able to move when uncomfortable situations present themselves. The other area of some concern, I think, for the campaign, a lot of people are looking for a reason to vote against a black candidate for president. and or for some other reason is looking for a way to justify a vote for Clinton against Obama, and this provides them a reason to do so.
What's the excitement level there in Indiana, Dennis?
Well,
with this primary is coming up.
Indiana has not seen an active primary in 40 years. And I was editor of the Des Moines Register for 6.5 years and went through 3 cycles in Iowa. And Iowans have become so jaded. A politician will walk around the street, down the street, and if they want to have a cup of coffee, they'll walk the other way. In Indiana, they will quickly run over to be seen with the politician. People here, I think, are excited, even to the point of being giddy about the attention the state's getting, about the excitement of actually having a chance to make a difference. I think there's a little question that this year, Indianapolis or Indiana, in terms of its role in the campaign, the elections, may well have as much of an impact as Iowa.
Jack Beatty, what do you think about Obama and Wright? I mean, there's a limit to how much we should invest in this particular angle of the narrative, as Ellen Goodman calls it, and yet it seems to be important. Is Barack Obama putting it behind him or not?
It's caused a dramatic deterioration in support for Barack among white working class voters. The Pew Research poll today makes that clear. Hillary now... A month ago, Hillary was 50 to 40 among white Democrats with high school diploma or less. Now she's 65. He's 25. Whites earning $50,000 annually or less. Last month, it was Hillary 47, 45. Now 58, Hillary 34, Obama. Overall, among Democrats, Obama last month was 49. She was 39. Now he's 47. She's 45. And, you know, Obama has said that he's carried white voters here and there. But really, he has, according to a poll by NBC, he has lost the white vote in 26 of 29 primaries that they sampled. And he's even lost, and then Obama changes the metric slightly, and he says, well, I've won among low-income people, but if you factor in the white working class there, he's lost even younger white working class voters by an average of about 19%. So this is a serious, chronic problem with his campaign that we noticed right at the beginning in New Hampshire, and the Bright matter has made it all worse.
And yet, Ellen, when people do the numbers, the guys who crunch these things, they stay. He still seems to be out front. It's still his to lose, despite Hillary's momentum lately.
Yeah, I think that's right. The numbers stay, but the narrative has changed. If I can go back to the narrative, because the story, the appealing story about Barack Obama, is that not only did he transcend race, not only was he a cross-cultural candidate, but he would bring all of us to be able to transcend it. And instead. It seems to have this week become divisive, so that people who found him attractive because he was a uniter find now that they are stuck in a narrative that is divisive. So he's lost that sheen. He's lost that wonderful story.
I wonder. I mean, I think that's still the story still to be ultimately told.
I'm not saying that
an awful lot of people want that sheen for the whole country.
I agree. That's it. A lot of people really do want that story. A lot of people also want the story that she has to offer, which is a wonderful narrative, too. But, you know, at the moment, Wright really took a rake and scraped the sheen off of it.
Yeah, for the moment. Of course, superdelegates continue to add up a little faster for Barack Obama than Hillary Clinton this week. Here's Joe Andrew, who former President Clinton appointed chairman of the Democratic National Committee in 1999, with his surprise announcement this week, yesterday in Indianapolis, throwing his support behind Barack Obama.
I didn't call Barack Obama. I didn't call Senator Clinton. I'm not asking for permission. I'm not asking for forgiveness. I'm basically saying this is what I believe. And I won't engage in the old political theater, which is to call somebody up just to give them time to have their attack dogs out ready to run on you, any more than I'm going to call Barack Obama and ask him what I should say and what I can do.
Dennis Ryerson, tell us about Joe Andrew. He's being quoted all over this week as a former Clinton guy, once promised Hillary Clinton, now on the Obama bandwagon. He said, enough already. This fight is hurting the Democratic Party. Let's rally behind Obama. How do you interpret?
Joe, like many people, is very frustrated by this continued battle, and I think he feels that in the long run, Democrats are going to be hurt this fall. Now, Hillary makes a compelling case that in her situation that, hey, after the primaries are over, you know, in mid-June, people are going to be moving on, that Democrats will rally. She told the Star's editorial board earlier this week that it would be foolish for Democrats to even think about voting for Republican in the general election. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Joe is well known around the state, and he does carry a lot of weight, not so much, I think, with the general public as he does with the politicians. We still have some, I think there are only three uncommitted superdelegates left now. Of the 12 superdelegates from Indiana, five have endorsed Obama, four for Clinton. And it'll be interesting to see how the other three turn out.
And, of course, Hillary Clinton, no wallflower this week. She was at the gas pump, and she was sitting down with Bill O'Reilly out in South Bend. Bill flew out to see her. Here he is, a little back and forth, O'Reilly taking issue with her tax policy, pointing to what he called a socialist component.
You're going to raise taxes on the wealthy, and that's income redistribution. You know what that is. And income redistribution is why some conservatives don't like you. All right? It's because you take from the wealthy and you give to the left's affluent. That's socialism. That has a socialist component.
No, it isn't.
Sure it is.
Teddy Roosevelt a socialist?
Somewhat.
Oh, I think that Teddy Roosevelt was a great American who understood that our country works better when we're all in it together.
Teddy Roosevelt, somewhat a socialist, says Bill O'Reilly, and Hillary Clinton pushing back. We've got to take a short break right here. Ellen Goodman, it's great to have you with us. Dennis Ryerson at the Indianapolis Star. Please stand by. And Jack Beatty. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news this hour. All eyes on the economy. Obama breaks with Reverend Wright. Al-Qaeda's back, says the State Department, and much more. Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Ellen Goodman joins us from the Boston Globe. Dennis Ryerson, he's editor at the Indianapolis Star. And, of course, Indiana and North Carolina have big primaries coming up in the week ahead, very important ones. Jack Beatty is here. You're welcome to join us as well. What do you think? Will Indiana and North Carolina break the Clinton-Obama deadlock, or will this go right on? Are you with John McCain on breaking health insurance away from employers, away from your job? Did you see the YouTube video of conditions at Fort Bragg? And what were you thinking on the five-year anniversary of Mission Accomplished this week? I want to get just a little bit more of Hillary Clinton and Bill O'Reilly in South Bend, Indiana. Here he's going after her ability to win a majority vote to cinch the presidential nomination. She shoots back, citing her record on partisanship.
You know, when I started running in New York, people didn't think I could win. And then I came back and won with 67% of the vote.
You've done good in New York.
Because I reached across party lines. I'm the one with the record of bipartisanship.
But you're a more polarizing personality. You're like I am. And I hate to say that. With all due respect. But you are. And Obama's a nice guy.
You know,
and that's what
this is all about. I happen to think if you want to take on the health insurance companies, the drug companies,
you gotta be tough.
The oil companies, you got to be tough.
I got to ask you this.
And we
got to
have a president who's a fighter again. Now, will that create, you know, some folks who are a little upset? Yes. But if we don't get back to fighting for the American people, we're not going to recognize our country.
All right. But I'm just trying to tell you that it's a personality contest.
Bill O'Reilly and Hillary Clinton. Bill O'Reilly laying it down for the candidate right there. Ellen Goodman, how about it? He says, you're a more polarizing personality. You're like I am. What about that? In the general election, Hillary Clinton v. Barack Obama as the, you know, opponent to John McCain. She's hung very tough in this primary campaign. How do you see the general working out one way or the other?
She has just been amazing. She's the little energizer bunny, you know. But I think what you're seeing at play with these two candidates is two very different views of how social change comes about, because they're both change agents. And he believes that it's transformative and you come up from the bottom and people, you know, want something and it will happen at the top. And she believes basically from her life experience that you have to, you know, wrestle for every inch of change from an implacable opposition. That's what she learned in the Clinton White House, and that's the way she sees it, and that's the way she's campaigning.
Dennis, both Clinton and Obama have sat down with you and your editorial board. Oh, I don't know if you were even there as editor. Maybe not. Maybe it was the editor of the editorial page, or maybe you were. You,
I was there.
Good. So you've talked with them both. Your paper out today with its endorsement. Again, the editorial page, Going for Hillary Clinton and Experience. What did you take away from your sit-downs with each of these two candidates in Indiana?
Yeah, well, what was surprising was the enormous energy that Clinton showed and continues to show during the campaign, an incredibly long, wearing process. But she shows up, and it was like she just started yesterday. Very specific on details. When she met with the editorial board, we would talk about things from China policy to other issues. She was on point. She was focused. Obama was very good. Very good at selling his message of hope and aspiration and different kinds of politics. But there was a feeling among members of the editorial board that in terms of the specifics, the details, the experience, that Clinton clearly had the edge. There was some concern about the Clinton political machine and all of that. Will it be politics as usual? But overall, it was the experience and the knowledge that seemed to sway members of our group.
Do you think your board mirrors the state, Dennis? I mean, you've got in Indiana, you've got some Michigan influence that comes down and Kentucky influence that comes up, media and otherwise, and the Illinois, Chicago media market you're part of, obviously.
Yeah, you're right. There's Michigan-ana, there's the Cincinnati-ana, there's Kentucky-ana.
Right.
It goes on and on. The region in Chicago, around Chicago, 600,000 people in the Chicago media market, very important. 20% of the Democrats in the state live up there. This is a split state. Indianapolis is quite a bit different than the rest of the state. It's a city of Lilly Pharmaceuticals, the largest health insurer in the country, the second largest medical school, the fourth largest transplant center, lots of museums, one of the largest museums, top 10 size in the country. Mm. Quite a bit different than your image of Indiana. But I think a lot of people here, it's a very traditional state. And a lot of people here are frustrated, just as all Americans are, about high gas prices. Somebody told me yesterday that his wife got a call from a friend of hers. She was out of gas, and the wife was going to get her some gas. And my friend said that he told his wife, well, you might as well take her some filets for what the cost is.
A little mignon.
And, people are talking about that. We've lost 45,000 manufacturing jobs. 20% of the state's population is involved in manufacturing, the highest concentration in the country. So there's a lot of concern about that, a lot of concern about issues of trade, a lot of concern about the economy and where things are going. So I think people are split. Lot of them really do want things to be different. They're afraid of the bickering, the fighting. But at the same time, they want somebody who's strong enough to figure out how can we get ourselves out of this economic mess?
Yeah.
How can we stand up to other people in the world?
Yeah, and yet Jack Beatty, Joe Andrews, no fool, former head of the DNC at Bill Clinton's appointment, and he's gone the other way here.
Yeah, and he's joined today by Paul Kirk, another former DNC chairman who's endorsing Obama. But Dennis, here's my concern here.
Sure.
Hillary Clinton is demagoguing here in Indiana, running ads on her gas tax idea.
Right.
She and McCain are for it. Obama's against it. You know, presidents try to tell the truth, and one of the things we find out in campaigns is that they're prognostic. They predict what kind of president we're apt to get. In 2000, George Bush really ran a mendacious campaign on his economic program, as Paul Krugman tirelessly pointed out. Now we have Hillary Clinton making a what all economists and any person of sense would regard as a demagogic appeal to cut the gas tax. And, you know, what the question I think Indiana voters and lots of people have to ask is, well, if she'd do this in a campaign, what would she do as president?
Ellen, we heard that from environmentalists this week saying if she'll say this now, when long-term Americans are going to have to probably face higher energy prices, as grim and difficult as that is, if she's, you know, going for the gas tax holiday now, it's going to make her hard for her to turn around and do the right thing in the White House. What do you think, Ellen?
Yeah, I think that was a bad move, too. But I think you can make the case that over, say, health care, you know, that her health care policy was better. You can start parsing one piece of public policy after another.
Well, then we're out of the narrative and into policy,
yeah,
and that's
not so bad.
No,
not at all. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, if you're talking, what you're talking about is the two of them. I mean, we've spent, you know, 18 months or the primary, however many children are going to school who weren't born, whatever. So we spent so long with Democrats parsing these tiny little differences between each other that we have to remember who we're going to be running against, John McCain. And the fundamental question for a lot of the voters is who's going to beat John McCain?
For a lot of Democratic voters.
And that is really...
Of course, a lot of Republicans lining up right behind.
Yeah, for the Democratic voters,
just a moment.
Right.
Yep. Dennis?
Ellen makes a good point. But, voters react viscerally. And our polls show that the single biggest negative for Hillary Clinton was the area of trust. And I think that does speak to kind of the opportunistic ways in which she approaches some things, which is a weakness. I agree with Jack. It's a weakness of the campaign.
Yep.
The gas tax thing, she shows up, rides up to a service station in a truck and gets out and watch the guy while he fills up the truck. And then when it reaches a certain dollar amount, she says, oh, my gosh, we're already up to here. And, it's all a photo op. That's what politicians do. But I think the whole trust issue is really important. And I asked her about that when she was at the editorial board meeting. In Indianapolis. And she freely acknowledged that part of it was the fact that she'd made misstatements and some mistakes. But she also said that she'd been in office much longer. And over a period of time, you build up those kinds of things. But I think
you build them up or you earn the right.
Well, that's just it. I think over time, the campaign has.
At the same time, they are looking at Obama, who's hit his first bumps. And these are deep and personal bumps.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, wow, it took him a little while to get a grip on this.
Yeah, to get a grip. I want to turn to our listeners. We've got a lot who are calling in here. Ellen, Dennis, Jack. Let's go to Dave in Old Forge, New York. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
I've got to take issue with something that was discussed a moment ago. Ms. Goodman said that voters are frustrated, or her readers are frustrated, because the Reverend Wright story is not issue-based. And then Dennis came along a moment later and suggested that people in Indiana don't particularly care about Reverend Wright's story.
Mm.
And yet, Jack, pardon me, suggested that this was affecting, positively affecting Hillary Clinton's momentum. But the fact is that she lost 12 points in Pennsylvania, and she doesn't have
She lost 12 points. She won in Pennsylvania.
The delegate count that the advantage that Obama had.
So where are you going to? We understand by many accounts, Obama still has an edge in the numbers of delegates and sort of momentum on the superdelegate side. But what's your point within that?
Well, my point is that the Reverend Wright story is, from your reporters,
mm-hmm.
Reverend Wright's story is not an issue for them, and yet somehow it's affecting Hillary Clinton's momentum, and yet as though she has positive momentum, but in fact she doesn't. And so there's a conflict there.
Yeah, well, I'm right there baffled with you about where the momentum is right now. It's hard to see. Hillary's been very strong and very public. Barack has had a couple of tough weeks, yet the numbers go in all kinds of different ways, and maybe, Jack, we should just put the muzzle on momentum and wait for Indiana and North Carolina.
Right,
waiting for Godot. We were waiting for Pennsylvania, and now we're waiting for Indiana.
From Godot,
we'll be waiting
Indiana.
For Montana.
What do you say, Jack?
But look at North Carolina. Look what's been happening there. Now, there are polls all over there. Some as high, Obama has as high as 16%. In others, it's down to 6% for him. But just 2 months ago, he was 25 points up in North Carolina. So there is at least a possibility here that Hillary could win both Indiana and North Carolina.
And
North Carolina would be
on.
A major upset, Indiana less so.
Yeah.
But that really will change the whole dialogue about the campaign, and it will, it may not do anything about the delegate count in a dramatic way, but it certainly is going to get the attention of superdelegates and get attention for her argument, which is, look, Democrats are having buyer's remorse about Barack Obama. You folks, the superdelegates, you've got to come in now and overturn the will of the people.
Of course, well, you're right, maybe. But Joe Andrews saying just the opposite. Let's get a call from Boston and Deepra. Hi, Deepra. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a comment about the superdelegate issue with the Indiana superdelegate transferring to
Joe Andrew, the former head of the Democratic National Committee. Yes.
Correct. He has made me think about my issue with the Democratic Party, and I always say, if it weren't for Republicans, I probably wouldn't be a Democrat because I have been, I guess, disenchanted with the Democratic Party for years.
What's the problem with Joe Andrew and his statement this week for you?
I think I think that he is showing that so many of our Democratic leaders don't have loyalty anymore. They're switching their allegiance to Hillary Clinton, and I'm from Massachusetts, and that was our superdelegate issue. They all went over to Barack Obama, and I like Barack Obama a lot. If he wins, I would vote for him.
Yeah.
But
Joe had promised to Hillary, and you think he should have stuck with that through thick and thin, no matter what?
I do, because he said there's no difference between the two. Okay, then therefore you should go with your loyalty and the history of the candidate, and I think she's a better candidate.
Deepra, we've got it. Thanks very much for that. Dennis, how about it? Give us a little backstory on Joe Andrew here. How do you interpret this change? It's kind of a big deal for a superdelegate to pledge, then unpledge. He's hardly alone in it, and yet it caught Deepra's attention.
Well, you know, he is somebody who surprised everybody by coming out. He insists that he didn't talk to anybody. He insists that he didn't get a call from the Obama campaign. This was his decision. I think, again, it boils down to the fact that a lot of people are increasingly concerned. A lot of Democrats, they're getting scared. Here you've got John McCain going all over the country, going to New Orleans and criticizing President Bush for how the whole Katrina issue was handled, going to Youngstown, Ohio, and talking about trade, going to Des Moines, Iowa, in the middle of the Farm Belt, and talking about that we shouldn't renew the Farm Bill. You know, he's going everywhere and showing some independence from the administration and conventional wisdom. Meanwhile, the Democrats are fighting. And I think there's a growing concern that this could be damaging in the long run.
Everyone's feeling that. Let's get another call here, if I may, from Hanover, New Hampshire. Dean, you're on the air.
Hi. Just a couple of comments, actually, about one of the major, more or less transcendental ideas that you've been discussing, and that is the issue of divisiveness. I tuned in when you were discussing that, and I thought, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with divisiveness? As far as I'm concerned, from a politician, that's an absolutely good thing if he or she is divisive.
And in what aspect? Polarized politics or putting a stick in a difficult issue? Or which angle on divisiveness, Dean?
Taking a stand against the people who are currently in charge and who have deliberately divided the rest of the nation up into smaller pieces so that they can keep themselves in charge.
Dean, we've got it. It's short time before the break here, but you say bring that kind of debate, that kind of divisiveness on. I thank you for that. I want to hear a little bit from John McCain before we hit the break here, because as you say, Dennis, he's been all over the place while the Democrats have been fighting. Here he is talking about his plans for health insurance, health coverage, rather than continuing the current system of employer-based coverage, which Democrats support. McCain proposes a system in which people buy their own insurance.
It would help change the whole dynamic of the current system, putting individuals and families back in charge and forcing companies to respond with better service at lower cost.
Jack Beatty, shades of George Bush on Social Security here. You'll be on your own and it'll be better for you.
It'll be better for you. It's also shades of Bush in the 2007 State of the Union address. He came out with a program like this, and it was so controversial there wasn't even any committee hearing on it. So in terms of a public policy, this is probably dead on arrival. But McCain's basic assumption couldn't be more different from the Democrats. The Democrats say we need more regulation of the insurance company market. He says we need less. The details of his plan, you know, he would encourage people to take a $5,000 per family tax credit to pay for their health insurance instead of the employer based system. He would encourage them to do that by taxing the contributions your employer makes to your health care. Now, in some cases, that can be as much as $7,000-$8,000. That would now be taxed, and so you'd have an incentive to get out of that system and to get into the $5,000 tax credit. Sounds great until you realize that the average plan is $12,000, and the employer usually makes up the difference. Under the McCain plan, what would make up the difference between the 5 and the 12? We're waiting for the details.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, Late Night Funnies, Political Cojones, and Hannah Montana in trouble this week. Barack Obama showed up on David Letterman last night to present the top 10 surprising facts about Barack Obama.
And the number one surprising fact about Barack Obama.
I have not slept since October.
I believe it.
In Portage, Indiana, Hillary Clinton picked up the endorsement of Paul Gibson, a steelworkers' local union president, who said she's got what it takes to be president.
I truly believe that that's going to take an individual that has testicular fortitude. You know, that's exactly right. That's what we got to have.
Okay, and teen star Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana, caused an uproar with racy photos in Vanity Fair magazine. Here's Whoopi Goldberg with some showbiz advice.
If you're looking to keep your fan base, you also do a Tiger Beat that says, here's me in Tiger Beat, because the Tiger Beat kids are not supposed to be reading Vanity Fair.
One, two, three, four.
Listeners, we're sitting down this hour with Ellen Goodman, Pulitzer Prize-winning syndicated columnist at the Boston Globe, Dennis Ryerson, editor of the Indianapolis Star, where it's primary time next week, and Jack Beatty, you can join us as well. How about that Al-Qaeda? Back in Pakistan, the State Department says. Back in Afghanistan, you saw the attempt on Karzai. Back maybe in Iraq. And what about the Supreme Court? Did they clamp down on bogus voters with their Indiana voter ID decision, or just clamp down on voting? Let's get a call from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to talk about the Fort Bragg scandal.
Yes, sir.
I just want to personally say I've been living at Fort Bragg for almost 3 years, and the barracks, the living quarters ain't nearly as bad as the news media has bloated up to be.
Really?
Yes, I live in barracks right across the street from the 1st of the 508. The people that just came home, I'm in their same brigade, and we all came home together, and their barracks look the way they do because they didn't take the necessary precautions to fix them up before they came home.
John, that is very interesting, and I want to stick with us. I want to hear more from you, but here's a little bit of that controversy that you're talking about, and outraged parent posted a video on YouTube of the conditions of barracks at Fort Bragg. This is Ed Frawley's son, Jeff, served 15 months in Afghanistan. Dad says after spending weeks there without showers, this is what greeted him and soldiers on their return home.
The dark spot behind the peeled paint is mold. This is right over the head of where the soldiers stand when they take their showers.
And that's just the beginning of it. John, I mean, you tell us, I know Fort Bragg is very big. It's a sprawling base. You say it's okay. Let me just, my niece was in love with a soldier at Fort Bragg, snuck in and lived there for a while. It's such a big base, you can get away with crazy stuff like that. And she brought me stories of just crazy situations there. Really not good. But you say it looks okay to you?
Yes, it does. That's just that individual unit who didn't fix up their barracks. When they came home, we sent a group of people back 2 months before we all came home and had them fix up the barracks, clean them out, paint the walls, you know, make sure everything was nice and clean and neat for when we got home. So we had a clean, neat place to live because, like it's said, we had months without showers, you know, we had poor living conditions over there, and, you know, now every single day of the week, I mean, every morning when we wake up, we have outrageous room inspections because it's all over the news. And, you know, like you said, people's parents are blowing the thing up. And
so they're making you spit polish every day. Were you in Iraq or Afghanistan or where, John?
I was in Afghanistan at the Peshtika province.
And since you've come home and when you think about your experience, do you feel correctly taken care of by your country?
Yes, I do. I feel like everyone has done their individual part to make our coming home as comfortable as possible, helping us to reintegrate with, you know, civilian life again.
You're a big-hearted man, and we appreciate that. And it sounds like the pressure is going to be on to keep your bunk real neat for a little while there at Fort Bragg. Thank you very much for that call.
It's just going to be on you, Tom, to tell your niece why you outed her on the radio.
Well, hey, she's lived with more than that. She's lived at Fort Bragg, after all. John, thanks a lot for that. It was yesterday the 5th anniversary of President Bush's appearance on the USS Abraham Lincoln. The aircraft carrier in front of that mission accomplished banner that's so famous. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino this week saying maybe that was the wrong banner, trying to play down the anniversary here.
I think what's important
is what the president would, how the president would describe the fight today. You know, it's been a very tough month in Iraq, but we are taking the fight to the enemy.
Taking the fight to the enemy, large casualties there, though, this month, back up as high as, getting toward last September when we saw a high. Dennis Ryerson, we're hearing the reports of rockets some days kind of raining into the green zone. 13-foot rocket, somebody was talking about. A lot of trouble in Sadr City. American air support there, apparently necessary, but also bringing about some civilian casualties that get people awfully riled up. How's the war playing in Indiana, Dennis?
People are very concerned here. It's interesting. This is a state that traditionally has been very supportive of military defense. Indianapolis has more war memorials, I think, than any city outside of Washington, D.C. We have a higher percentage enrollment in the National Guard than other states. As we speak, 3,400 members of the 76th Military Brigade from Indiana are in Iraq. We shipped a reporter and a photographer over with them. And yet, despite that, I think the tide has turned in this state. People are frustrated. Senator Dick Lugar has consistently questioned whether the administration knew what it was doing to handle things after the initial invasion. And I think the tide is turning a lot of frustration.
Do you think that puts the general election outcome up for grabs in Indiana or not? Pretty solid Republican there. Does it put Indiana in play? The war, the economy, you name it.
I think there's a real chance. Our polling shows that things are tighter than they've been in a long, long time. It's shocking, really, that this state, which hasn't voted Democrat for president since 1964, now shows itself to be divided. And there is a very real chance that because of the economy, because of the war, because of frustrations in general with where the country is headed, that this state very well could go Democrat this fall.
Let's take a call from Augusta, Georgia, and Robert. Hi, Robert. You're on the air. Hello, Robert. Are you there, my friend? We may have lost Robert. Let's go to Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Stanley. Stanley, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you know, Stanley?
Well, I know a few things here, and I just want to make my comment on, you know, everybody here. I know a few things that's a little privy to nobody else. First of all, I don't understand why the I understand the big picture here, but I don't understand why the president wants to drill in the Alaska. For one, we got thousands of oil wells capped in America that we could open up and start again. And why don't we build any more refineries? I mean, is this all a money game just to hurt us, Americans? I'm a truck driver, and the last 22 years I've been independent. I don't see any relief. I see them putting grips on us, and it's the rich politicians that we've been putting in office.
What about the gas tax holidays, Stanley? Are you for it or against it as a truck driver? Will it help you?
I'm against it. I think it's a really bad idea. I think it would put everything in turmoil. I mean, it's only going to – besides that, we pay quarterly taxes, road taxes. And if you've ever driven in Michigan on our roads, you know that we need the money to fix our roads and our bridges.
And, of course, that gas tax goes to infrastructure, right?
Right. I mean, it would do us no good at all. I mean, it's just a ridiculous idea. Besides that, Memorial Day's coming up here pretty soon. There's no way they can get it passed anyway.
Yeah, there's a reality check from the highways of America in Grand Rapids. Stanley, thank you very much. Jack, you hear Stanley just doesn't think the job's getting done for him and maybe for a lot of people. He's rich politicians, he says. Of course, Bill O'Reilly and Hillary Clinton went around on that this week, and she said, well, that's me.
Yeah, and also this week, the president said that if the Anwar drilling had gone ahead as he wanted in 2002, Congress blocked it, we would already have been feeling the effects. There'd be a larger supply and so on. In fact, according to experts, they wouldn't have been able to produce so much as a barrel until 2011, even if it had gone through in 2002. And then it would only be 40,000 barrels a day, a drop in the bucket compared to the 20.6 million of barrels we use every day. So Anwar is a cul-de-sac. Tom, if I could just get back to the fifth anniversary of Mission Accomplished. Mm. You know, just looking at this historically, the mission is so blatantly unaccomplished, and that is the mission against al-Qaeda. You adverted to it earlier. They're rampant in Pakistan now, perhaps involved in the assassination attempt against Prime Minister Karzai. President Karzai in Afghanistan, and of course the metastasizing out of Pakistan, according to the Defense Department, throughout the region. After, you know, the attack, if you look at it this way, the attack on Iraq, it was as if after December 7, 1941, President Roosevelt said, we're going to attack Switzerland. That's, in effect, what this man, what President Bush has done. Our enemy, he has not destroyed our enemy.
Switzerland?
He's the only, well,
as sweet and alpine, as as neutral as Switzerland?
or Algeria. Okay. I mean, he has not destroyed our enemy. I mean, we expect the President of the United States to take the battle to the enemy. He hasn't done it. And that the Democrats have not used this issue against him consistently, I think shows somehow the feeling about the peace faction of the Democratic Party may inhibit them. But the fact is, the voters haven't really seen it in its true dimensions. Mm. He's let our enemies go free.
You know, and Ellen, in a way, I've been thinking in recent weeks, that's only part of the story. The State Department now saying al-Qaeda, yes, indeed, is rebuilt. We hardly needed to be told that. It's been pretty evident. But you may know, I just came back from a week in China very recently. You come back to the United States. We came from Shanghai. You look at New York City. It now looks kind of old and dowdy and no big deal. I mean, they've got skyscrapers. You know, whether you like that or not, they got momentum out there. You think the challenges that the U.S. is up against in terms of competition and what's going on in the world.
I think there's a profound sense that this country isn't working. I mean, you don't have to fly, but it helps to get that sense that the country isn't working. The FDA isn't working.
The deaths on the heparin, right.
You know, the FDA isn't working. The FAA, the airlines aren't working. Everybody who tries to make a call to have something fixed can't get it fixed. You're sitting in line, you know, with that. I think that's true. In terms of the fifth year anniversary of Mission Accomplished, that is going to be huge in this campaign as soon as we all start, you know, stop fighting each other in that case, because McCain is on the Bush program for the war.
And not really being challenged much on that during this long
primary. And the big question that's going to come up is, does McCain think that we got into this war on false premises, which most Americans do think? And he's never, as to my knowledge, agreed to that we were brought into the war on the notion that there were weapons of mass destruction, which there weren't.
Yeah, but so let's say he concedes that. Does that really hurt him? Is that really the problem at this point?
I think that is such a sticking point. You have it identifies him one way or another with the president, because you have at this moment in time a president who has the lowest approval rating and the highest sense of self-esteem of anyone imaginable. And is he going to continue that what me worry kind of policy and the con job? We're talking now about the, quote, reemergence of al-Qaeda, which, as we know, did not exist in Iraq before we made it a nice, cushy place for them to develop.
There's going to be a lot to talk about right there. Let's get a couple more calls, if I may, from Panama City, Florida. Peter, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was particularly annoyed by the guy that called in, I believe, from Michigan as an apologist for the Army and the VA for the conditions at Fort Bragg.
No, sir. Just to clarify, John identified himself as a U.S. serviceman calling in from Fort Bragg and said he's stationed there and it's okay by him.
Yeah. You know, if I'm a property owner with 1,000 units and 200 of them are substandard, I don't deserve a pat on the back. I deserve a kick in the rear. And I think that's the same situation we have at Bragg, at Walter Reed, throughout the VA medical system. The Bush administration created these problems, and they deserve a good kick in the rear for them existing.
And you're not ready to give a pat on the back, and we hear it. Thanks very much for that. Let me get one more from LD, Russell, New York. Hi, LD, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My main concern is about health care, which before the last break. I retired out of the military after 21 years, and as such, right now, I pay my own health care. Granted, I feel sorry for all the people who cannot afford health care, but I don't think Hillary or McCain have the right slant on this.
John McCain says he wants everybody to pay their own, kind of. The government would help out with that, but how about that approach?
Well, that's all right in itself. However, I look at this as a green light for the health care companies, the HMOs and the rest of them, just to raise their rates. And, you know, good God, they're expensive enough right now. I'm probably paying between Medicare and a Medigap insurance, $1,500 a year minimum.
Yeah. LD, our time grows short. Let me put it to you, Dennis Ryerson. We were talking about this this morning. I heard what might be a little generation gap. A young producer here saying she pays her own and prefers to because she changes jobs. She doesn't want to count on an employer anymore. McCain might sound good to her, but LD's out there, you know, carrying his own. He's afraid what will happen if the McCain plan goes through. How's it sound from Indianapolis, Dennis?
Hoosiers tend to be older than the national average. They tend to earn less money than the national average. As I said, a heavily manufacturing state with 45,000 people out of jobs in the last 4 years or so. A lot of people are concerned about health care here, and I think it will be a key issue. How it plays out, I don't know, but I would guess that this would be a good issue for the Democrats.
Ellen, last word goes to you today. Where do you think this Democrat fight is going to be settled? On the floor of the convention in Denver or sooner?
Well, I have my airline ticket and my hotel reservations.
It's going to be wild.
But I'm hoping that it will be settled in June. I mean, at some point, the superdelegates have to decide. They have to decide to decide and just, you know, put down who they're voting for, and at that point it'll be over.
Well, they're begging for a decision, but whether they delivered or not, we shall see. Ellen Goodman with the Boston Globe, always wonderful to have you. Thanks so much for being here this week.
Thank you.
And Dennis Ryerson, editor of the Indianapolis Star, good luck with all your voting next week. We didn't even get to voter ID. We'll come back to that. Thank you so much, Dennis, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Jack Beatty, great to have you.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.